Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, November 22nd, 2021. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to National Liberty Alliance and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up where we left off last week with our scripture reading. We were in the Gospel of Luke, and we are in chapter 11. So the Gospel of Luke, chapter 11, read by Alexander Scobie.
Chapter 11. And it came to pass that as he was praying in a certain place, when he ceased, one of his disciples said unto him, Lord, teach us to pray, as John also taught his disciples. And he said unto them, When ye pray, say, Our Father which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done, as in heaven, so in earth. Give us day by day our daily bread, and forgive us our sins, for we also forgive everyone that is indebted to us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. And he said unto them, Which of you shall have a friend, and shall go unto him at midnight, and say unto him, Friend, lend me 3 loaves? For a friend of mine in his journey is come to me, and I have nothing to set before him. And he from within shall answer and say, Trouble me not, the door is now shut, and my children are with me in bed. I cannot rise and give thee. I say unto you, Though he will not rise and give him because he is his friend, yet because of his importunity he will rise and give him as many as he needeth. And I say unto you, Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh receiveth, and he that seeketh findeth, and to him that knocketh it shall be opened. If a son shall ask bread of any of you that is a father, will he give him a stone? Or if he ask a fish, will he for a fish give him a serpent? Or if he shall ask an egg, will he offer him a scorpion? If ye then, being evil, know how to give good gifts unto your children, how much more shall your heavenly Father give the Holy Spirit to them that ask him? And he was casting out a devil, and it was dumb. And it came to pass, when the devil was gone out, the dumb spake, and the people wondered. But some of them said, He casteth out devils through Beelzebub, the chief of the devils. And others, tempting him, sought of him a sign from heaven. But he, knowing their thoughts, said unto them, Every kingdom divided against itself is brought to desolation, and a house divided against a house falleth. If Satan also be divided against himself, how shall his kingdom stand? Because ye say that I cast out devils through Beelzebub. And if I by Beelzebub cast out devils, by whom do your sons cast them out? Therefore shall they be your judges. But if I with the finger of God cast out devils, no doubt the kingdom of God is come upon you. When a strong man armed keepeth his palace, his goods are in peace. But when a stronger than he shall come upon him and overcome him, he taketh from him all his armor wherein he trusted, and divideth his spoils. He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathereth not with me scattereth. When the unclean spirit is gone out of a man, he walketh through dry places seeking rest, and finding none, he saith, I will return unto my house whence I came out. And when he cometh, he findeth it swept and garnished. Then goeth he and taketh to him 7 other spirits more wicked than himself, and they enter in and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. And it came to pass, as he spake these things, a certain woman of the company lifted up her voice and said unto him, Blessed is the womb that bare thee, and the paps which thou hast sucked. But he said, Yea, rather, blessed are they that hear the word of God and keep it. And when the people were gathered thick together, he began to say, This is an evil generation. They seek a sign, and there shall no sign be given it, but the sign of Jonas the prophet. For as Jonas was a sign unto the Ninevites, so shall also the Son of Man be to this generation. The queen of the south shall rise up in the judgment with the men of this generation and condemn them. For she came from the utmost parts of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, a greater than Solomon is here. The men of Nineveh shall rise up in the judgment with this generation and shall condemn it, for they repented at the preaching of Jonas, and behold, a greater than Jonas is here. No man, when he hath lighted a candle, putteth it in a secret place, neither under a bushel, but on a candlestick, that they which come in may see the light. The light of the body is the eye. Therefore, when thine eye is single, thy whole body also is full of light. But when thine eye is evil, thy body also is full of darkness. Take heed, therefore, that the light which is in thee be not darkness. If thy whole body, therefore, be full of light, having no part dark, the whole shall be full of light, as when the bright shining of a candle doth give thee light. And as he spake, a certain Pharisee besought him to dine with him, and he went in and sat down to meat. And when the Pharisee saw it, he marveled that he had not first washed before dinner. And the Lord said unto him, Now do ye Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness. Ye fools, did not he that made that which is without make that which is within also? But rather, give alms of such things as ye have, and behold, all things are clean unto you. But woe unto you, Pharisees, for ye tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and pass over judgment and the love of God. These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone. Woe unto you, Pharisees, for ye love the uppermost seats in the synagogues and greetings in the markets. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye are as graves which appear not, and the men that walk over them are not aware of them. Then answered one of the lawyers, and said unto him, Master, thus saying thou reproachest us also. And he said, Woe unto you also, ye lawyers! For ye laid men with burdens grievous to be borne, and ye yourselves touch not the burdens with one of your fingers. Woe unto you! For ye build the sepulchres of the prophets, and your fathers killed them. Truly ye bear witness that ye allow the deeds of your fathers. For they indeed killed them, and ye build their sepulchres. Therefore also said the wisdom of God, I will send them prophets and apostles, and some of them they shall slay and persecute, that the blood of all the prophets which was shed from the foundation of the world may be required of this generation. From the blood of Abel unto the blood of Zacharias, which perished between the altar and the temple. Verily I say unto you, it shall be required of this generation. Woe unto you, lawyers, for ye have taken away the key of knowledge. Ye entered not in yourselves, and them that were entering in ye hindered. And as he said these things unto them, the scribes and the Pharisees began to urge him vehemently, and to provoke him to speak of many things, laying wait for him, and seeking to catch something out of his mouth that they might accuse him.
Okay. Jen, do we have any questions or any announcements?
Jan's not here tonight, and I have several questions and one lengthy statement.
Okay.
Would you like to have those now?
Yep, we'll do that now.
First, what most people don't realize is that Donald Trump stepped down from president of the several municipal corporations of the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, collectively known as the United States federal government, and not from the presidency of the Union of the several United States of America, 1789-1791. And having signed the Insurrection Act, handed it to the Navy, Office of Military Commissions and JAG, as the only lawful military when the Union Congress has not declared war. And remember, the Marine Corps is an adjunct of the Navy. Thus, many of the JAG arrests are done by SEALs and Marines. Many of the key members of the Joint Chiefs know this, and that is why the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs is out, and the military refused to let Biden and company have the football, in quotes, and Trump kept it through today and continues as president of the Union, and its several member republics, and the corporate Congress, Supreme Court, and administration cannot interfere with the tribunals. And he got that from RealRawNews.com. And why, when Joe Biden tried to push his way into the Pentagon, he was denied access. The Pentagon serves the Union, not the corporation. Now, quote, we the people, unquote, within our several Union states need to do our part and populate our several Union states. Offices elect senators and representatives to a Congress of the Union. And upon joining Donald Trump's social media program, inform our president to appoint non-attorney lawful government back, and the military is just waiting for we the people, in quotes, to do our part, and they will fully back us under the Insurrection Act and remove by whatever force is necessary the corporate imposters, and even faster than the tribunals are going at it, and very publicly. We can do this through, among other ways, the Committees of Safety John Duresh, NLA, promotes, as well as appointing ourselves and each other to the office of public minister to perform the duties of the vacant offices of our several Union states and our Union, to which we are the constituents. Let's get busy. That's the end of that comment. Do you have any comments you want to make? And then I have more questions.
Well, I don't know that I can add anything onto that. Well said. Next okay. question.
This is from Brian. Hi, I live in Oregon and have completed the joinder process with a filed, certified, and uncontested common law grand jury D&O filed by the Northern District Court in New York back in the original local circuit court that had been found in default and moved for cause. They are now pushing me through an expedited landlord-tenant case wherein they have been completely ignoring due process or demands of proof of jurisdiction. I presented at the readiness hearing as, quote, in special appearance to test the sufficiency of service process and jurisdiction, unquote. The judge, the same one who was party to the original default non-judicial foreclosure claim, she had no idea what you're talking about, unquote, and refused to allow me to say anything. I finally was able to interject to ask if it was, quote, a court of record, unquote, and she responded, quote, yes, it is. Anyway, the trial will continue as scheduled, unquote. As we know, she probably has no idea what that is either. I raised objection, comma, motion for judge to reconsider, denied, objected again, and clarified my denial of consent. I have even called the local sheriff, who claims no power to change a negative outcome. So they are having the unlawful trial tomorrow, and I was wondering if you have any suggestions of action. I plan to file multiple actions as plaintiff after the dust settles. But what can I do now? Should I contact a federal marshal to act, and how can that be done? Thank you for your consideration and thoughts. I also have filed another move for cause separate of joinder with a subsequent affidavit of default judgment in my favor, and also filed into the same non-judicial foreclosure case, which was duly processed and entered one day before they sold it at sheriff's auction. But they sold it anyway. Again, a cause of action moved to federal court and proven with sworn affirmation ignored. This affidavit of default judgment did save the house twice from federal bankruptcy actions wherein my challenges of proof of claim prevailed, and using the default judgment prevented the BK, the bankruptcy trustee or bank attorney, from taking the real property in bankruptcy. That's the end of that one, and I can read the questions again if you like.
Well, first of all, court of record, you're probably right. She probably doesn't understand, but being a federal judge, she should understand, so she might. I think it was a female. I think it was read out as her, not him, right?
Yes.
But that's not important anyway. Unfortunately, bar attorneys, and I've spoken with numerous bar attorneys, they understand a court of record as being a court that keeps a record. And I don't know whether they're actually taught that in their bar schools or if they just presume that. Clearly, they don't look it up in Black's Law to discover what a court of record is. And if it's a court of record, then there should be a jury there. And if there's no jury there, then obviously it's not a court of record. The only thing I would say is, again, it sounds like, well, if the trial's going forward, I presume a jury has already been chosen. Me, if I in court with a jury, I definitely would be talking to that jury, and I'd have a lot to say concerning what a court of record is and what many things that they have been told. Of course, they would constantly silence me up, but I would presume. So it's going to be a tough battle for them. You're probably not going to win, not today. The only hope we have is when we get to the other side. And that's why we're keeping records through joinders, because we're just building more and more evidence against, especially the federal judiciary, and how they are working together, clearly making, they're in sync with each other. That's conspiracy. It's collusion. They're making the same interpretations. They're doing the same thing. They're violating the same rules. They're violating due process. And they're violating their own rules. They are violating their own laws, what they claim to be the law, what they claim to be the rules. It's tough. And again, you could have a chance if there is a jury involved, and it is indeed a court of record, then you have a chance. Talk to the jury. And again, be ready to be silenced constantly. The jury might see through that, too. Again, I don't know. This is today's Monday, so I presume tomorrow's the court day, and the hearing begins, I guess. Whatever you have to say to the jury, plan it very well. Keep it as short as possible, each point. Make the points that you really want to say to them, but get it out quickly, because you're going to be silenced. And so every time you have something to say that you want the jury to understand, you want to try to say it out in the minimum amount of words as possible to get your point. I know that's difficult, but that's what you have to try to do, work towards. At some point, the judge is probably going to tell you to stop talking about these things like that, because if you don't, I'm going to find you in contempt. And then you have to consider whether you're going to want to go to jail or not. Even though they don't have the authority to put you in jail, and no judge really has the authority to sentence you to jail or do these things ultimately, because they're supposed to be ruling in a court of equity and not in a court of law. And in administrative courts, there is no power to fine or incarcerate. Of course, that hasn't been around for quite some time. They've been doing that since at least 1938, probably a lot longer than that. But 1938 is when they believe they've kind of put all things together and got to the point where their civil law is now the law of the land. And they truly believe that. And as long as the people believe in that fiction, that is the law. Reality is the way one perceives it. And unfortunately, the reality of most people believe that the court system and the way these judges operate and the courts operate, they perceive that to be the way it should be. And that's why these committees of safety are so important. And for us to really get the knowledge out to the people that they need to have in order to have government by consent, and to understand, this problem that we have in the court and how to correct it, and same thing in the political side, the political process. Because if you don't control the political process and you don't control the judicial process, literally 100%, if you don't control both of those power structures, then we do not have and we cannot have government by consent. It's an impossibility. There is no other way to have government by consent than to control the courts. The people control the courts. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for them. We are the lawmakers. We are the sovereign. We get the final say. We say yay or nay to potential indictments. We say guilty or innocent in a court of record. We decide what the punishment is. We decide what the law is. We have the power to nullify the law. And when the people come to understand that and start to exercise that power, that's the day we will have government by consent. And in the political process, the same thing. We decide who gets onto the ballot. And when any of these people get onto the ballot, whether through us or through someone else, and we discover that they're not obeying the Constitution, that they're violating their oath, they're overextending their jurisdictions or their authorities, then we have the power to remove them through recall and, if necessary, through indictment. That's control, that's power, that's a government that fears the people. And until the people come to understand that, Thomas Jefferson said, you know, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And going back to the committees of safety, the focus is to get 200 people in every county. More, of course, as time goes on, you will get more. That will build up quite quickly once the people start to see the power and the authority and start to become educated on what's really going on and how the people can take this power back. But we have the control. And once these committees of safety take power and authority, then we will indeed have that control. And that's how important that process is. But I know that was long and a lot more, you know, I answered a lot more, or spoke a lot more than really that was asked, but that's the whole picture. Okay, do we have anything else?
Yeah, I have two more.
Okay.
And one said, please discuss this more as a question. Romans 13, render unto Caesar, which equals Caesar, what is his, the surname, and render to God what is his, the God-given name. Could it have been essentially this easy? Yes, but what are the obligations to God you must follow, walking in the kingdom according to his law? See an example of a public notice here, and it's got a YouTube link. I was one of founders of the Alaska Assembly until AVR and Destry Payne came along, of which I know John has had interactions and considered a friend until recently. I had a newspaper called Free the People, AK, out of Fairbanks for a few years until censored, and Gus Breton helped, and I and the Rensels set up a common law talk show for a few years, as well as had a common law meetups and teachings, have the first ever petition of redress remonstrance in Alaska history, exposing OCS and quite a lot more to express, but a cell phone with limited connection from off-grid Alaska sometimes is tough. Please consider the importance of what I'm trying to relay. Watch the good faith notice to get a better grasp. Weigh the importance of the meaning and proper conveyance of what it means on every level to walk on water. Blessings in Christ Jesus. Wake up and repent. The kingdom is here. And then it's signed Christopher Michael. So,
well, apparently in order to try to answer that question or try to respond in some way, it sounds like I'd have to see that video. I do recall the individual that was mentioned and what they were doing up there in Alaska and trying to connect with them. We never really had a good connection. They were kind of off on their own plane, and they weren't interested in seeing or thinking outside of that. And not that their work wasn't good, but I think their work was good and what they were focusing in on. I don't know the end results. Well, we kind of do know the end results to some degree. You know, I don't know that I can answer anything. You know, rendering unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto God and what is God. Of course, that which is spiritual is unto God, and that which is physical to some degree, at least if we're in a government that has control over us, you know, we're dealing with the physical. You know, when it comes to a common law republic, you know, this makes things quite different. You know, if we were captured in some government and we didn't have a common law government, maybe we were under China or Russia or whatever, you know, You know, do the best you can and render to Caesar what is Caesar's. But in a common law republic such as ours, second only in the history of the world, Israel being the first and the United States being the second, this is God's nation. This is his nation, and this is where his people dwell. Of course, they dwell in other places, too. I mean, don't get me wrong on that. But again, this becomes sort of a two-way street, and I think that command can be appreciated to the enemy that they need to render to God what is God's, because we have a covenant with God through the Declaration of Independence, and our Constitution talks about one of the requirements of government is to secure the blessings of liberty. Liberty is not something we achieve on our own. Liberty is not something that we just are, you know, can accomplish somehow outside of God. Liberty comes only through the blessings of God. And God indeed did bless this nation, but he also judged it too, I think. And we've seen that judgment for quite some time, at least in our lives. I think things are about ready to turn around. In the Bible it says, if my people will call by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and turn from their evil, I may be paraphrasing this a little bit, I will hear their prayers and heal their land. That's sort of a paraphrase, I think. I know that's not word for word, but generally that's what that means. So I don't know that, that phrase, I guess that's about the only thing I can comment on. I'd have to see the video or whatever it is that they're talking about in order to respond further.
But can I send you that later on tonight?
Well, it would be a little difficult. I'll look at it and see if I can respond. But if something that would benefit the listeners here, that we'll see how that could go. But okay, is there anything else?
Yeah, there's one more. There were two questions, and I have one statement that I'd like to make. Sheila says, dear NLA, last week John brought up driver's licenses in response to a citizenship question. John has stated that it is a good idea on his behalf since he has driven commercially in the past, but most people do not drive commercially but merely commute. My question regarding that is, if one gets arrested and goes through trial by jury, and the jury nullifies the statute and acquits the defendant, then can the acquitted persist in driving without a driver's license, since the acquitted cannot be charged for the same crime twice? And she has a couple other questions once this goes.
Yeah, but I'm sure they say, well, this is not the same crime because you're driving a second time, different thing. I mean, they go through all kinds of things. You're not going to win anything that way. And my point, let me be clear on my point. My point is that, my response to anything in a court concerning a driver's license would be exactly that. I have it because of commercial, in case I decide to drive commercial again. But not only that, it's a great ID. And unfortunately, they put us in a box, not only to box us in to get a driver's license in order to operate a vehicle, but also it boxes us in ultimately as an identification. And again, it just gets back to control. We shouldn't need driver's licenses, of course, obviously. And again, it is a commercial activity thing. It's part of equity. You can't make us do that. Of course, they got the controls, and as long as the people perceive fiction to be reality, this will continue to go on. We have to get to that point where we make people aware of the fiction that they're believing in, and that only comes through education. There's really no other way for that. And I guess that's about all I have to say about that.
Okay, Sheila's other question is regarding the grand jury. If it only takes 12 out of 25 grand jurors to vote to indict, why are the other 13 grand jurors necessary?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, the 25 comes from the Magna Carta. I mean, you get people who say 23, 24, 25, and we're talking about grand juries now. Not all the time do people always show up, so sometimes it may be only 20 people there when it's time to make a decision. They have to have at least 12 there, and the 12 then at that point have to decide to go forward with that, as far as an indictment is concerned. otherwise they can't get an indictment. I was questioning that myself. I was talking with Brent about that, on where the number 12 comes from, and I got to kick myself in the head a little bit on that one, because it does come from a biblical principle, ultimately the 12 apostles, the 12 tribes. It's a biblical principle, ultimately, 12 witnesses. I guess that's about all I could say on that.
Okay, I'd like to make one more comment.
Oh, let me make one a point, because I had a discussion with someone concerning that case that recently went by where that kid, he was a kid, young, that was found not guilty on all counts concerning, trying to defend himself and protect himself.
That's Kyle Rittenhouse.
Right. And someone mentioned to me when I said, hey, I heard that, they didn't know that he was found innocent. And I said, hey, he was found innocent. And they were very happy about that. And they said, did all 12 vote for them? And I realized, look it. If one person holds out, just one person holds out and refuses to go with a guilty, well, they got to continue in that room till they come to an agreement. Then the agreement may be, well, we can't go any further, so, hey, we all got to agree with that one person. There's no such thing as a hung jury. It doesn't exist. A judge can't claim the jury is hung. A judge can't dismiss a jury because they're hung. It is the duty of the judge, which isn't a judge, it's a magistrate. He could be a judge, and every judge is a magistrate, but they're performing the duty of a magistrate. They have to send them back. Go back until you decide what you're going to do, because you've got to either come out with one innocent or guilty, one or the other. There's nothing in between. And they may have to just fold and say, okay, we're just going to have to go forward with, we find them not guilty. And that's the way it is. They need all 12 to find guilty, and they need all 12 to find innocent. There's nothing in between. No such thing as a hung jury, and that's just something made up by the bar. And I've seen and heard of cases where the jury would find the defendant not guilty, and the judge would throw it out and, go for another trial. I mean, that's really an assault on everything we are as a people, and it's an assault on the law. All right, anything else?
Yeah, I just want to make one statement. And yes, part of Kyle Rittenhouse, the jury did found him innocent, acquitted of all the charges, and yet the news media, if you notice, are still saying, oh, I can't believe it. Even Maria Shriver said, I can't believe this kid goes around and shoots people, and he walks. So that happened.
Well, let me just comment a little on that. There's two perspectives on that. First of all, the people that might say something like that don't have the full story. That's number one. And they've been deceived because they've been, they just get the narrative and they don't have the full story. Then there's the side of the people that do have the full story and say that they have no respect for the law, and really they have no respect for our Constitution, which is the law, for our way of life, for our liberty, for a common law republic. They have no respect for it. They want communism or Marxism somehow, in their confused and distorted minds, thinking that would be a great thing to live under. They have no idea, those people who are pushing forward for that, no idea what that really is. But go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to mention that in the questions tonight, there was a red pill by Dr. Martin, Dr. David Martin. I have that. If anybody wants to email Terry at National Liberty Alliance, I can give that to you. I'm not going to announce it right now. And also, Glenn Beck had a story. His Wednesday night special was 2 hours, and he goes from the beginning to the end with a whole bunch of documentation to back it up, and that's available on the net. So,
what conclusion is this? What are they?
Fauci lied, and that
Oh, okay.
Players, he named names, and they actually got together and decided that they weren't going to tell President Trump about it. And that's why we're in the state that we're in here with the COVID virus. There you go.
Okay. All right. We're going to move on. We're done with anything? No other announcements or anything?
No, I don't have any. And Brent is here, and Ron is okay. Here also, that you invited.
All right. Well, yeah, Ron has a conversation wants to bring up, so we're going to look into that a little later. We're first going to go through the things that we normally do first. But we've got about a 25-minute look at no jury, no liberty. So there is no liberty without a jury. So we're going to go through that. It's a video PowerPoint that I put together. I don't think I sent out anything on that. I know I sent some messages out over the past weekend, but I don't think I made mention of what tonight's subject was going to be. But we are going to try to have a subject matter every single Monday, anywhere from 20 minutes to a half hour long. And hopefully we'll have people who have questions or comments or corrections after that, after this study. And if not, then we'll just move forward. After that, we'll go to Brent. And then after Brent, we'll come on to an open forum. We'll take Ron first and discuss his subject matter and then anybody else after that. So without any further delay, we'll go to the study for tonight. Again, no jury, no liberty. Without an unfettered jury, there can be no liberty. Jury decisions are final. This is government by consent. Amendment 7. In suits of common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact by jury shall be otherwise re-examined in a court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. The King's Bench, Black's Law, 4th edition. A court of record is a judicial tribunal, that's the jury, we the people, having attributes and exercising functions independently of the person of the magistrate, designed generally to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of the common law. It is the King's Bench, jury of 12 people, where nature's God rules and decrees the law of nature, also known as common law. In criminal cases, it is at the moment of the impaneling of a grand jury when the Supreme Court opens for justice, and not before. And if the grand jury indicts, it passes the case for final judgment to the petit jury. Thereby, the Supreme Court remains in session until a judgment is decreed. The grand jury is the decreeing body outside the courtroom, and the petit jury is the decreeing body inside the courtroom. Whereas no court or officer of the court can alter, add, or change the decisions of the said juries, nor does the court or an officer of the court have any controlling authority over them. Common law and its jury have not been defeated, just hidden by the enemies of liberty, also known as the bar. The bar has seized control of our legislatures to eliminate common law from our education and replace common law with civil law, which is Babylonian law, thereby removing it from the people's memory. This led people to believe that statutes that control our behavior are the law of the land, when in fact these statutes are pretend law that is foreign to our Constitution. It is the duty of all the people to educate themselves and participate in our political and judicial processes in order to secure liberty for ourselves and our posterity. The sureties of peace. An indictment of the common law grand jury is the opening and manifestation of due process in a court of law. They are the sureties of the peace that we find in the Magna Carta and ordained by the people through the Fifth Amendment and thereby formally acknowledged as an unalienable right. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or an indictment of a grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Likewise, the petit jury provides for due process ordained by we the people through the Sixth Amendment, and thereby formally acknowledging as an unalienable right. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury. The Seventh Amendment, also ordained by We the People and formally acknowledged as an unalienable right, provides that due process is to proceed under the rules of the common law. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, that's a trial by jury, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Government by consent. The jury is an important instrument of the people for government by consent, a great conduit of communication between those who make and administer the laws and the people. All the operations of government and all its offices come before the scrutiny of juries, thereby giving them an unrivaled ability to advocate public improvements and expose corruption in government. Thomas Jefferson spoke of the jury in the Declaration of Independence when he penned, "Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed." The American jury is that institution whereby the people themselves consent to government's accusations. There exists no other. Therefore, to deny the jury is to deny the consent of the people and thereby deny self-rule and liberty. History reveals that the only protesters of the laws of nature and of nature's God that blessed us with our common law and the jury system are the American Bar Association offices of the court, the ABA-controlled legislatures, and the ABA judges that burden us with their pretended laws. These lawless tyrants have seized control of our government, deprived us of our American heritage, defiled our just courts, pilfered our liberty, and trampled upon our peace as they assemble their statutory prisons to control our behavior and destroy our republic. In short, they robbed from God and trampled upon the covenant of 1776, of which God said, "Cursed are they that rob God of his nation." Indeed, Jefferson prophesied correctly when he said, "I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever." Malachi chapter 3, verses 8 through 9. The law is written in our hearts. Romans chapter 2, verses 13 through 15. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles, which have not the law, do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law are a law unto themselves, which show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and their thoughts the meanwhile accusing or else excusing one another. Common law is common unto all men, founded upon one simple command, do no harm. God has indelibly written this in the hearts of all men. Therefore, the most qualified judges are those who live and work among us, our peers, through juries. The people do not need statutes to tell them when a wrongdoing has occurred. Informed common law juries would mean the end of the rule of tyrants and the exposing of their crimes. Early on, Jefferson came to the aid of juries, the very institution that saved our founding fathers from unjust prosecutors from England, who eventually carried many away across the sea to try them. Jefferson said, "I know of no safer depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves, and if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abuses of constitutional power." The jury's judgment is final. The grand jury and petit jury are one. Both are ministered by and made up of the people chosen at random. They act and decree under the principles of common law. that being seeking justice, honor, and mercy. And they are guided by two common law maxims. One, without a victim, there is no crime. And two, for every injury, there must be a remedy. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law. Jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court that proceeds according to statutory law is not a court of record, which proceeds only according to the common law. It is an inferior court. If the King's Bench, jury of 12, is not present in the court, it is not a Supreme Court of common law and has no jurisdiction over the people summoned before it without their consent. In the case of United States versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that even the United States Supreme Court could not second-guess the jury, writing, "The judgment of a court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts, deciding it. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law." Acts of treason. The jury is the Achilles heel of tyrants. H.G. Wells. In March 1922, the New York County Association of the Criminal American Bar Association announced that it planned a vigorous statewide campaign to abolish the grand jury institution. Former District Attorney Robert Elder called upon public prosecutors to take the initiative in replacing the inefficiency, ignorance, and traditional bias of grand jurors, and Judge Thomas Crane of New York supported the movement. Testifying before the Committee of Law Enforcement of the American Bar Association, he observed that a judge or some other man learned in statutes should participate in grand jury hearings. In Minnesota, Attorney Paul J. Thompson urged the state to adopt a Wisconsin system of prosecution upon the order of a district attorney. In 1922, Judge Roscoe Pound and Felix Frankfurter conducted a survey of criminal justice in Cleveland and added the weight of expert testimony to those who sought to eliminate the use of grand juries. Pound and Frankfurter reported that juries were inefficient and unnecessary since trial court, politically driven men, were quite capable of protecting Americans against executive tyranny. However, professional opposition to the inquest of the people did not go unchallenged. In 1924, the Grand Jurors Association of New York began publication of the panel, a militantly pro-grand jury periodical. Through its pages, former grand jurors, judges, and prosecutors made clear the importance of the institution. The association urged grand juries to exercise their full powers to representatives of the people and fought all attempts to make them mere agents of the court. As a result of its efforts, grand juries took on a new importance for many people. The grand jury shall never be suspended or impaired by law. From the very beginning of our nation, bar members from Great Britain was sabotaging the American experiment in a concerted effort to subvert the people through an all-out assault upon the sacred institution of juries. The assault continues to this day. Rejecting independent juries is a good thing and making feeble arguments, claiming that they are inefficient, untrained in law, too expensive, dangerous, and often exceed their authority. Wait a second. I thought we were the authority that ordained and established the law of the land. Untrained in whose laws? Man's laws? Certainly not God's laws. For these subverts don't even know God except the God of their bellies. Dangerous to whom? Tyrants and criminals? Inefficient by whose assessment? Bar attorneys? It is the bar attorney that drags cases on and on for years and never meets out justice. It is the bar attorney that makes justice too expensive. And it's God's law that rules over man, and it was God who ordained the tribunal of 12, the petit jury. In 1938, the New York Constitutional Convention approved by a vote of the people on November 8, 1938, and later confirmed again on November 6, 2001, the following clause. Article 1, subsection 6. The power of the grand juries to inquire into the willful misconduct in office of public offices and to find indictments or to direct the finding of informations in connection with such inquiries shall never be suspended or impaired by law. No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The jury judges the facts and the law. There is no statutory prescription against making the jury aware of possible punishments. Instead, courts that have disallowed jury awareness of sentencing contingencies have peremptorily resorted to the fact-finding sentencing dichotomy to justify this denial. For example, the Eighth Circuit of the United States versus Goodface merely stated that the penalty to be imposed upon a defendant is not a matter for the jury, and so it was proper not to inform the jury of a mandatory minimum term. No further justification is given in making this facile distinction. The judges are committing treason. Instructions to the jury in a criminal case in Maryland, quoted by Alan Shefflin and John Van Dyke. Jury nullification, the contours of a controversy, law and contemporary problems. Members of the jury, this is a criminal case, and under the Constitution and the laws of the state of Maryland, in a criminal case, the jury are the judges of the law, as well as of the facts in the case. So that whatever I tell you about the law, while it is intended to be helpful to you in reaching a just and proper verdict in the case, it is not binding upon you as members of the jury, and you may accept or reject it, and you may apply the law as you apprehend it to be in the case. Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, United States versus Moylan. If the jury feels the law is unjust, we recognize the undisputed power of the jury to acquit, even if its verdict is contrary to the law as given by the judge and contrary to the evidence. If the jury feels that the law under which the defendant is accused is unjust or that exigent circumstances justified the actions of the accused or for any reason which appears to their logic or passion, the jury has the power to acquit, and the courts must abide by that decision. The jury's verdict is absolutely final. The argument for opposing the nullification instructions are, in our view, deficient because they fail to weigh the political advantages gained by not lying to the jury. What impact will this deception have on jurors who felt coerced into their verdict by the judge's instructions and who learned after the trial that they could have voted their conscience and acquitted? Such a juror is last apt to respect the legal system. Alan Shefflin and John Van Dyke, Jury Nullification, The Contours of a Controversy, Law and Contemporary Problems. The true criterion of a legal power is its capacity to produce a definite effect, liable neither to censor nor review. And a verdict of a not guilty in a criminal case is in every aspect absolutely final. The jury are not liable to punishment, nor the verdict to control. No attaint lies, nor can a new trial be awarded. The exercise of this power in the jury has been sanctioned and upheld in the constant activity from the earliest ages. Justice Kent, New York Supreme Court. The jury is the author of the law. The decisions of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decisions of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly, rather than resort to appeal to an appellate court. Decisions of a court of record, it's a trial by jury, may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or a Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgments of a court of record. The judgment of a court of record, it's a trial by jury, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on all this court as it is on other courts. It puts the end to the inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Ex parte Rock, Watkins, 3 Peter, cited by Sackcloth and Bustamath. We the people are the most qualified to make and decide the law because we are the author of the law, and we vested Congress with statute-making powers that we the people in our courts of justice reserve the right to consent or deny by nullification according to the facts of the case as we see fit. And most importantly, as a people, we called upon our Creator in our founding documents to be the king of our courts of justice and not man as we ordained. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Preamble. The jury is to reflect God's image. And by God's grace and holy will, we the people in 1789 were gifted with his liberty to be what man was meant to be, free and independent. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king. His majesty, that's God, in the eye of the law is always present in all his courts, though he cannot personally distribute justice. His judges, the jury, are the mirror by which the king's image is reflected. Blackstone's Commentaries. And since then, 1789, we have been engaged in a battle against the rulers of darkness over the control of our courts. As the final day of Leviathan draws nigh, we the people sit on the king's bench and are able to reflect his holy will as we read in his word. Jeremiah 31, verse 33, "This shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith the Lord, I will put my law into their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people." We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We the people vested Congress with statute-making powers. We the people defined and limited that power of statute-making. We the people limited lawmaking powers to ourselves alone. We the people did not vest the judiciary with lawmaking powers. We the people are the judicial tribunal, having attributes and exercising functioning independently of the person of the magistrate designated generally to hold it, and proceeding according to the course of the common law. Government by consent is by the jury. Men must be governed by God, or they will be ruled by tyrants. William Penn. An essay on the trial by jury in 1852. The authority to judge what are the powers of the government and what are the liberties of the people must necessarily be vested in one or the other of the parties themselves, the government or the people, because there is no third party to whom it can be entrusted. If the authority be vested in the government is absolute, and the people have no liberties except such as the government sees fit to indulge them with. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. If the government can select the juries, it will, of course, select those whom it supposes will be favorable to the enactments, like they do now. and an exclusion of any of the freemen from eligibility is to select of those not excluded, like they do now. It will be seen from the statute cited that the most absolute authority over the jury box, that is, over the right of the people to sit in juries, has been usurped by the government. Lysander Spooner, Trial by Jury, page 92, 1852. In conclusion, we the people have the unalienable right to consent or not as to the government's accusations against the people, the right to judge both the facts and the law, and the penalty of the guilty with an eye on restitution. Join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. Go to nationallibertyalliance.org/county-sheriff-project. Join us to save a republic by learning the science of government by consent. Come to our weekly live open forums every Monday, 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. Take our free civics course. Learn real American history. Take our government by consent course. Learn how to file a court case. Learn the difference between law and equity. Learn the Constitution. Learn natural law, also known as common law. Learn the true meaning of liberty. Learn how we the people can reinstate our natural law courts of justice. For as Thomas Jefferson said, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be. An enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all its citizens. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. Okay, I see we got two people in the queue that have questions or a comment or a correction, so we'll take the first one, Janet. You got the mic, Janet.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Hello?
Yep, go right ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go right ahead. We can hear you.
Sorry, this is a little bit new to me. Okay. I thank you so much for all of this. This is my first time. I've been on your list for about a month or so, and I'm just trying to get a little more like grounded and caught up. And listening to these meetings really is really helpful in helping me understand government by consent. It's been very eye opening. I have a lot to learn, but I really appreciate it. My question is actually regarding the. I don't know if you can help me with this question, but it's regarding the vaccine mandate.
Mm-hmm.
My question is regarding the vaccine mandates and the religious exemption. I'm helping one of my family members on this, and we submitted the, I gave her the template that was in your weekly newsletter, and the employer, the government, General Services Administration is asking for additional verification certifying religious exemption. Do you have any sort of recommendations on like how to approach this, like whether we need to submit like certain, like when they're asking for additional verification on religious exemptions, do you have any recommendations on additional pieces of information you recommend submitting to attest to this exemption?
Well, first of all,
she was given a form that said that they're still assessing her request, and so she is concerned. We're both concerned. I'm trying to help her if I can help myself at the same time. We're just trying to understand if we submit additional like substantiation from like say the pastor or like. If that would help her case. Does that make any sense? Sorry.
Well, the problem is they don't care what you say or what you do. They don't care about the law. They're lawless, and there's not much you can do. You can try to put them in a position where you kind of trap them or move it into another court that might, be more sensitive to the law, which is hard to find, which means that you'd really have to move it into a federal court at some point and hope that you get a judge that will find that it doesn't... isn't held to maintaining the status quo, which is almost every judge is doing these days. The day of judgment for these judges are coming. A couple of things. First of all, a mandate isn't a law. Okay, that's just the beginning.
That's true. I noticed that.
But they're not going to hear that, okay? And
right.
I think what we'll do, because we really want to focus in on the subject matter for tonight, and then the second part, later on in our program, we'll open up to this kind of discussion. What I'd like to do is push this over to Gerard in a short while when he takes the mic, and then he can follow up maybe a little fuller than I can, because he's been really focusing in on a lot of this stuff, and he's up to date on what's going on and what might be helpful in the courts. So if you stick around... maybe hit star six. When I take someone else on the mic, hit star six and a one again. You'll get back into the queue, so you'll be held in place. So when Gerard picks up the mic, then he can address your question in more detail.
Okay. No problem. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Okay, let's take our next caller here, Willington. From North Carolina. First name from North Carolina. You got the mic. What's your first name?
Mr. Dan Stanlin, pleasure here.
Good. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, absolutely. And I must say that what you were last telling us, we ought to keep this and play it over and over and over until we have got this really mastered what you have told us tonight. And because this is where everything is going to be really headed for us to get justice. All those people that you have labored with, I don't mean that in a wrong way, that you have listened to and tried to, work with those people and encourage them how to save their home. Ladies and gentlemen, what you just heard is in a court of record, and you don't get that every day. I know I've just been battling with some federal courts just recently, and I want everybody to hear tonight that Mr. John DeRash and his team that has been there and is setting examples for us, we should pay due diligence, attention to what our Heavenly Father would want us to adhere to, and that's the truth. And the only truth can be found on our continent here in America is by His Holy Scriptures leading us to what is common law. We need to master this. We need to spread the word. We need to buy the book by all means. I've got to send my funds in. I've been so darn busy up to just recently. And Mr. John DeRash, I want you to, and Jan and Gerard, I want all you guys to know, as I should have been on here before, but I was trying to still deal with that court that I've been dealing with. And that's in the last, a lot of people don't know this, but on even Saturdays, I have been putting documents into the mail. You can't do this necessarily with other courts, but when you're talking about a federal court, yes, you can absolutely email stuff up to about 12 noon here in America or down here in the South. And I've been having to do this for the last couple of Saturdays. I'm going to get right to the point and say to you guys, thank you, thank you. Many times have I listened to you guys, and you guys have shown the precedence of being there and standing in foot soldiers to help people save their homes from these tyrants and these people that are in power to steal from you at 3,000 and I think it's 100 and oh gosh, I'm 40 some counties, or better. It's you'll tell me the actual count in just a minute, I'm sure. But it's an ever situation in America, in North Carolina. We have 100 of these counties. companies. And the defense and that you need for your family, if you care for your family, you should be on this Monday night call. You should get his book. You should also encourage your neighbors to get educated to what was just told to tonight. And he spells it out so well, and that should make you right there realize, you know, it's not complicated. He makes things very simple, and he just spoke very eloquently as to being, you know, to try to encourage people to get together, you know, hold of things. If you do not, you're going to have to be the only person yourself that's standing in your way for you and your family. And if you love your family and care for your family, you will get that book. You will share it and buy some for other parties. You will spread the good word for them to be on National Liberty Alliance is monthly. And there's other, I mean, not month, excuse me, there's, I said that wrong, weekly, but there's throughout the month on a monthly basis. There is also during the week. Start learning here from Gathering First and coming here on Monday night. You'll do yourself proud, as Minnie Pearl says many times years ago. Now, here's the good news quickly. I have prevailed, and just recently got an order from a federal court, and I went through a lot, folks. I ain't kidding you, but I'm going to tell you there, a lot of times, Mr. John DeRash and Gerard, Jerry Gerard, and those guys, they were there, you know, supportive, and Mr. Jan, absolutely, I tip my hat off to all you guys there where not only me, but countless others, I guarantee I'm speaking for a lot of people have tuned in and benefited, and we need to support a cause like this. There's only one that's like this, and it's bringing back America to us, we the people, and it's we need to get involved. If we do not, you can just say to yourself, I am my own worst enemy. I'm too hard-headed, thinking I'm not going to spend a little bit of time. The time on here is a lot of times is unbelievably I don't know how, so enlightening and encouraging. You shouldn't have a holdback. I know people have, you know, kids and things like this and church or other things, whoever knows, whatever, but trust me, we do have recordings of this too. Become involved. Stay focused for the care and the support that this organization deserves and needs for the saving of America, folks. We're in an unusual, I'm going to close right here. We're in an unusual, I don't know what you call it, a trench. And we need those guys that hit Normandy and it was in them foxholes. I'm not kidding you at all about this, to stand firm for what they did for Americans to have what we have today. So we need to think about this and pay it forward is what I'm trying to tell you. Just like they did for us and back in those. And that's not just that war either. We have other wars too, the Vietnam and the Korean and so forth. Anyway, I don't want it just to be looked upon as what I said here, predicated because of wars. You know, wars is not a good subject. I'm telling you, we do have a war that's unlike we've never seen on our lands. Wake up tonight, folks. You better grab a hold of this instructions that Mr. John DeRash and Jerry, Gerard and Jan and any others, and, oh, especially Brent Allen Winters, oh my gosh, and many countless other people I don't mean to leave out. Be on this call, folks, for your own preservation of your family, and in doing so, you will love your neighbors if you share with this. And we're supposed to be our neighbor's keeper. share this to them. Encourage them to be on. So I'm going to be on there Monday night, and I hope you'll be on there. And it's here's the number, and come join us. Well, that's the good news for me. It was a sizable, I can't say over this air, but it was a sizable win, and it is, I don't know how to say, but it's also expandable. There's some other ongoing situations that will also occur, but 40 years, I'll just say this, 40 years of controversy. Mr. John DeRash and Jerry Gerard and Jan and all the others and Brent Allen Winters held my hand, put up with me in a lot of different ways at different times, and I prevailed. The order just came in on November the 4th, and so I apologize about not being here sooner, but I wanted to get here tonight and here for everybody that's involved and is under the sound of these guys' voice. You better believe you rest assured you are fortunate, and show that respect and that love back to that organization. Let's keep it solvent and further for other kids that are being born like just recently, and for their generation and so forth. So thank you for allowing me to say this a little bit, Mr. John.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Okay.
I know you've got some other agendas there. So I know it took a little bit of extra time there, so I better yield right now and let's get to the rest of the agenda.
Okay, the rest of the story. Okay,
yes,
Dan,
sir.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay, we got a couple more people in the queue. What I'm going to do is I'm going to move over to Brent and Gerard. And so Brent will take the mic in a minute or two. And when he finishes speaking, Gerard will open back up. I'll be here too. And we'll focus in on Ron and then the other two callers and anyone else that comes into the queue after that. Gerard, are you here ready to take the controls? And Brent, are you ready to go forward? Take the mic.
Aye, aye.
I on one. Brent? Brent, are you near the computer? I know you're online there.
They keep moving his mute button around.
there he goes.
I
here he comes.
My mute button around. I got so many things on my screen, then I try to uncover them, but it's not there. But at any rate, here I am.
Yeah, wait till you get two or three screens.
I used to hope I could do that, but I don't know.
Well, two screens are easy to set up. I'm going to try three soon. But and it is really nice to have two screens, and I can imagine three screens and even more. But with that, Gerard, I'm going to pass. As soon as I introduce Brent, you got the controls. And like I said, as soon as Brent's done, we want to pick up on Ron here. He's in the queue. We're going to have a discussion with Ron. And then we'll pick up on the other callers. Excuse me. All right, so anyway, introducing now Brent Allen Winters, the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. He's a common lawyer, and his website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic, and Gerard, you got the board.
Well, thank you, John. This is Brent Allen Winters. CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. As we say on the radio, coming to you from the hinterlands of the Wabash River Valley, where the hogs, the frogs, and the dogs keep up a racket all night long. Somebody said to me the other day, I miss you saying that. Please say it again. I hadn't said it for months, so I guess I ought to start saying it again. I don't know if it means anything worthwhile, but at least I guess they say, well, that's Brent. Well, here I am. And all of the discussion heretofore that we've heard here has triggered many things in my mind. And so I jump from one thing to another. I have a plan to start. And then I jump from one thing to another thinking, well, I'll respond to this. I'll respond to that one. No, I think I'll try to stick to my my plan today. I like to talk, and I'm studying, and we've been teaching this sheriff's course, and so I'm burying my mind in that material, and I'm, of course, writing. If you write, you fill your mind. Your thoughts become clearer in your head if you pass your thoughts through lead. Okay, am I here? Somebody said they can't hear me. Well, I'll just keep talking. Tell me again if it's too quiet, but I'm talking loud and have my mic next to my mouth. Well, so I'm writing, and I'm going to read to you some of the things that I've written here about the sheriff. I seem to be going in and out, says Terry. Dadgummit, I don't know what to do about that. I think it's the fault of the platform, because I know this time got a good connection. So I'll just keep talking. Armstrong now, thank you. There's somebody who's talking. I'll keep talking.
You're coming in fine. It's probably on this side because you're coming clear.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, he does fade, though. It seems like there's some bandwidth problems somewhere.
Okay.
I experienced it here. But just keep going. I turn mine up when you get low, and then I turn it back down after you get loud again. That's all.
Okay. Well, thanks, Gerard. I'll try to keep my voice clear. The power of the county is the posse. The power of the county is the posse. The long rendition of the posse is the posse comitatus. The other day we were talking about it, and somebody said, well, it sounds like que pasa. When I was a younger fellow, I was out west, and people said que pasa, because you'd be talking to the Mexicans, and they talk Mexican, so we'd talk Mexican. I learned how to say a few phrases, and that was one of them. Well, que pasa, Spanish, is a Latin-based tongue, as is French. And que pasa has the same root as posse, and posse in Latin, and in the Latin-based tongues and forms of posse mean, we say the word possibility. We've robbed those tongues and brought that into English, possibility. Well, what's possibility? The posse is the possibility of the county. That means the possibility, the power, not the patent power, but the latent power, the power that is there but is not necessarily manifest yet. People have debated for centuries concerning Jesus Christ. Was he able to sin, able not to sin, not able to sin, or not able not to sin? And there are four Latin phrases that historically people have used to break that down back when in the Middle Ages. Posse non precari. Was it possible that he not sin? Or was it non posse non precari? And well, on and on it goes. But the word posse is a relatively well-known word because of our word possibility. And the possibility of a county lies in the men of the county. The possibility of the county lies in the men of the county. And I've said, and I believe rightly said, that's why I say it, that the militia of the state consist of the able-bodied men, able-bodied to bear a weapon in battle. The militia of the state is the able-bodied men, able-bodied to bear a weapon in battle. Now, the posse of the county, which is the building block of the militia of the state, the posse, the definition is a little different. It's not the able-bodied men. No, it's just the able men. They may not be able-bodied. They just may be able to do this, that, or the t'other. But when the sheriff grabs you and says, do this, if you're able-bodied to do what he asks you to do, like we were saying in the sheriff's course the other day, and Sheriff Dar was there, and I said, well, what if you are pursuing a felon, or one of your deputies there is pursuing a felon, as the law says, in hot pursuit, hot pursuit. That means you got him on the run. You're right after him. You saw him commit the felony assault with your own eyes. Sheriff's deputy or the sheriff's after him. They see him along the road. They jump out to tackle him. They slam on the brakes, jump out of the cruiser, and there's a man standing there. And he says to him, "Don't let anybody get into my cruiser while I'm chasing." Or says to him, "Here, hold this flashlight while I tackle this guy." Or whatever he says. If he's able to do what the sheriff asks him to do, well, he's part of the posse. He's part of the posse anyway, whatever ability he has. So that's the difference. It could be an old man, 80 years old. Could be a truck driver passing through the county that doesn't even live there. The sheriff has authority to impress him into service. We had a fellow at home. I grew up with him. And he was in a horrible accident, paralyzed himself from the neck down. He was quadriplegic. And his job was dispatcher. And he dispatched for the police. Now, he didn't dispatch for the sheriff because he wasn't in the county seat. But just as an example, by analogy, he wasn't fully able-bodied, but he was able to do certain things, and he was willing to do it. And so the posse is a little different that way. Again, the militia consists of able-bodied men, able-bodied to bear a weapon in battle. The posse consists of able men. Some of them may be able to grab up a shotgun or a pistol and help pursue a felon. And that's part of the possible duty of the posse. Well, there is an overlap between the posse and the militia. The posse is the building block, and no able adult man can become a member of the posse comitatus of his county any more than he can become a member of his state's militia. The posse and the state's militia are not something anybody can join. I want to join the state's militia. I want to form a militia. No, that's a legal impossibility. Well, why do I say that? Well, because it's not something you join, it's something that you are. Being a member of the posse, gentlemen, is something that you are. Being a member of the militia is something that you are. It's not something you join, you're born into it. I have a friend, I've mentioned this before, down in Georgia. He's 71, 72 years old now. And on his birth certificate, it says what militia district of the state of Georgia he was born into. God demands able men to recognize their duty as members of the posse and of the state's militia. God said. What do you say? Well, get the book, Militia of the Several States. I have a chapter in there that catalogs and unpacks every reference of the book of Deuteronomy, mostly the book of Numbers, some in Deuteronomy. The book of Numbers is about martial law. That's why it's called Numbers. That's where the militia, the 12 several tribes, were numbered twice. And it's all about numbers and taking a numbering of the men. Not the women, not the children, the men. Why? Because that's all that needs to be numbered. The rest of it, God doesn't ordain to take a census of other people. Well, let's get back to talking about the posse. You're a member of the posse by operation of law. It is not your choice. It is the law's choice. Thus it is said, our common law government, American government, is a government of laws and not of men. Men don't put you in a posse. You, as a man, don't even put yourself in the posse. The law puts you in a posse. Well, where's law come from? come from a lawgiver. It's got to have a source. What is it? Well, I'll give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. Sheriffs in the American Western movies often call forth the posse to help him, to help keep the peace. That means order. After the sheriff had taken the posse members through the modest formality of swearing them in, that is, if time allowed. And the sheriff's posse comitatus authority to call forth armed men to help keep the law's peace is rooted deep in our Anglo-American common law of government. Its origins, going back, are lost in the fog of antiquity. Nevertheless, the posse comitatus, that is, the ableness, the potential power of the county, thrives in 21st century United States. American sheriffs in the United States use their posse comitatus authority often, even daily. And the power of the posse belongs to the county sheriff. We've had people come and say, well, you mean I can't form my own posse? Well, of course not. We just made the mention of that. You don't form posse. You're born into it. It's not something you form, not something you join. Well, I have authority over men I can raise. Well, if the sheriff says you do, you do. If you don't, no, if he didn't say that, you don't. Don't get an idea that posse is something as rogue. No, the posse, by definition, is under the authority and command of the sheriff of your county. And if he's a dud, well, I feel sorry for you. Get a new one. But if you got a good one, encourage him. Let him know you're there to help him. Give him your phone number and write him a note. Email him. Say, I'm here to help. Here's my number. It's my duty. If you want me, let me know. I'm here to help. That is the duty of the posse, is to help the sheriff when the sheriff summons, that is, calls, commands, help. To be sure, the first official recognition of the power of the posse intended it for the sheriff's use, and the sheriff remains the user of the posse. The Anglo-Saxon office called sheriff is the foundation of the American sheriff's role as constitutional officer by the people's direct choosing. And as such, the sheriff enjoys independence from power outside his county in carrying out his duties. See, he depends upon the posse. And that needs to be said more often, and sheriffs need to be informed of that reality more often. I don't think a lot of them know it nor think about it that much. They just want money and hire deputies, and it's okay to hire deputies, of course, have full-time deputies, but picture with me. Matt Dillon. I know that's ancient history to some of you, but Matt Dillon was the sheriff of Dodge City. This is the kind of stuff I heard about often when I was growing up. Gunsmoke. Well, you had Sheriff Matt Dillon, and how many deputies did he have? Do you remember? Well, he had Chester, and then he had Festus. Remember Festus? Festus would always get into it with with Doc. Him and Doc was always going at it, and Doc thought Festus was stupid. But the truth is, and everybody knew it, when you'd hear Festus talk, he may have sounded hokey, but his brain really worked pretty good. And, well, that's a side trail. I didn't mean to go on a frolic. I was always fascinated with Festus arguing with Doc. But he had one deputy, and then if he needed the posse, he would swear them in, they'd be under his command. Well, sheriffs now, I know one county I was in recently, had a case there. And they had one sheriff and two deputies. One sheriff and two deputies. Not many people live there. But if he needed help, there were a lot of men live there. I say not many people. Well, there were enough for him posse. Police chiefs are appointed to their place within the chain of command of city government. The sheriff, by contrast, is autonomous from the inner chains of delegated and redelegated authority both within and without his county. What I mean to say is, the people choose him directly. You see, a policeman, he's chosen through a city board or the sheriff, and the sheriff's elected by the people and all that. Well, that's not the way it is with, or a sheriff, I mean a mayor. A mayor is elected by the people, and then the mayor appoints the police chief, and it's a bureaucratic position by comparison. Our common law and history of the posse from King Alfred the Great's Anglo-Saxon times, that was in the last half of the 800s, many centuries ago, to the present day, defines the office called sheriff. People say, well, why don't we have the office of sheriff any further back? We don't know about the office of sheriff any further back than King Alfred the Great. Well, they think that's where it started. Well, the reason we don't have any records of sheriffs beyond King Alfred the Great is because there was no such thing as written English until during the time of King Alfred the Great and King Alfred and his Welsh scribe Asher invented English in writing. People spoke it, but nobody had ever written it down. They didn't have an alphabet. So Asher was pretty much of a cleric. He was a churchman. He knew Latin. He took the Latin letters, and Alfred had learned Latin too, but took the Latin letters and applied them to the English sounds and invented what we call today written English. And we have Latin letters in our written English. Well, so after that, we have plenary records of a lot of things in English, ancient Anglo-Saxon. Kind of hard to read, but we have it. Before that, they had Latin. I have a copy of a deed someplace. I don't know what I did with that. It's just a copy. I mean, it wasn't a real thing, but it was a deed that King Alfred the Great's father deeded a hide of land and 10 wagon loads of wood. This guy was king of England. But he deeded a hide of land, that's about 20 acres max, probably more like 10. Nobody, it varied in different places in England. A hide of land and 10 wagon loads of wood. And to make it legal, somebody who knew how to write Latin wrote it out in Latin. Well, there was no English. It had to be in Latin. And King Alfred the Great, who was 6 years old at the time, he wasn't king, obviously, but they made all the king's children, all of his sons, put their mark on it with an X just to make sure nobody could complain and come back and say, well, the deed wasn't any good. And the amazing thing about that deed, this is a side note, that deed, of which I have a copy someplace, looks just like the deeds we have today. Has all the same kind of stuff. The recitals at the beginning and the land description and all that. And then the signatures of all those who might have an interest in the land transferring the title. Things don't change that much. And by the way, the office of sheriff has not changed. Everybody that writes about sheriff that has studied the sheriff at common law, and it is only at common law do we have sheriffs. Only at common law. Only in the common law countries. And in all of the common law countries except the United States, the authority and power of the sheriff has been reduced to a corn nubbin. There ain't nothing left. Just a figurehead of a position. But in America, our sheriffs here have essentially all the same fundamental duties that sheriffs had during the days of King Alfred the Great back in the years 871 to the year 899. That's when he passed away at age 50. He was king from those for almost 30 years. Hadn't changed appreciably at all. Well, at bottom, our posse comitatus law of the 21st century United States is the same as that of King Alfred's 9th century England, nowadays, as then, the sheriff, in carrying out his peacekeeping duties, can summon to his help every and any able-bodied man of the county. His discretion about whom to summon and how the men summoned shall be armed or otherwise outfitted is reasonably unfettered. This is Brent Allen Winters, CommonLawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. Join us for the sheriff's class. You can go to CommonLawyer.com and see how to sign up. We need to get the word out. Government at bottom has two functions in our common law tradition, and that is armed defense and justice. Armed defense is the duty of the militia and of the posse, and justice, we call it justice, that's the duty of the jury. And those two duties are the two duties of the posse of the county and the militia of the several states, even in their own jurisdictions. This is fundamental. Let's start focusing on the fundamentals and stay there. The next class we want to teach, we're about to finish the sheriff's class, but it's all available. We've recorded it in audio and visual. You can go and go through it again. Go to the website, commonlawyer.com. The next class will be concerning the jury, the grand jury. Very important. That's the other duty of the posse and the militia of the several states. This is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own, no one else's. And now I'm turning it back over. Gerard's making a good ready. I hear him. A good ready. Turning it back over to Gerard.
Thank you, Brent. Appreciate that. Okay, I'm going to take Ron first, like I promised John I would. So, Ron, I'm going to unmute you, and you can get started on your...
Yeah, and I'm here, too, so... Okay.
Go ahead, Ron. You're unmuted.
Thank you for inviting me to speak. We, the Oregon Statewide Jural Assembly, have found a preponderance of evidence to prove what I am about to say, and none to rebut it. I tell the truth, at least do not lie. We must do this ourselves. No one can do it for you, and you cannot do it alone. The word this is defined as returning to a constitutional republican form of government. We have been in a beneficial, predatory form of martial law since March 1861. The benevolent part is over. Pragmatic persons are willing to compromise their integrity and my freedom, liberty, and unalienable rights, as codified in our founding documents, for their best interests. Fraud vitiates all contracts, either partially or completely. This is what we think we know. All lawful statehood documents are withheld by the de facto incorporated governance. The city of Portland is a subdivision of the county of Multnomah, is a subdivision of the state of Oregon, is a subdivision of the United States. That is not a constitutional republican form of government. I got that from the GSA about the Mark O. Hatfield Federal Building, which is on Oregon, not federal land, thus bogus. And the records were sealed by a federal judge. This is a bogus eminent domain taking. I suspect the same is true in every case of federal buildings on non-federal land. Color of law is federal since March 1861, on Oregon since 1910. Each state has a flip date, flipping the de jure states into de facto state of states was started by the Illinois bar In 1906, I saw copies of the paperwork. South Carolina seceded from the Confederation and Perpetual Union after Oregon became a state in 1859, before Lincoln was inaugurated in 1860, thus breaking the Perpetual Union. Then Congress assembled as the United States of America, and the United States closed, sine die, March 1861. It has never been assembled since. There is lawfully only the United States of America, the creator of the United States, and the Constitution. The several states created the Confederation and Perpetual Union and named it the United States of America. Therefore, we are third-party beneficiaries of that contract, except for Amendment 10, and we are party to our states' and territories' constitutions. There are 33 lawful states and 17 territories. Fruit of the poisonous tree fits here. Men and women and children are in the de jure. The incorporated governance is in the de facto. The de facto law form is, quotes, he who can be deceived, let him, end quote. That is not a constitutional republican form of government. A solution is for every state and territory to assemble under their form of Oregon's Article 1, Section 1, which reads, natural rights inherent in the people. We declare that all men, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness, and they have at all times a right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they may think proper. The feds, the state, the counties, et al. Will acquiesce three times to that, and every other issue I enumerate here, they have for us on Oregon. Then form a civilian court of records, not hard, only five items. That enables ex parte Milligan and nullifies martial law, Liber Code, and FEMA. To my knowledge, only Oregon has done this. Then we formed a jury pool of Oregonian men and women. Then we formed a grand jury and made presentments to 38 prosecutors on Oregon and a true bill to our Article 3, one Supreme Court that claimed original jurisdiction found within Amendment 7 court, whose verdict has no appeal in law. We then formed Oregon's Second Amendment well-regulated militia. They all acquiesced to every piece of our paper. And I yield.
Okay, that was very good, Ron. And, you know, this is true. And the key here is de facto versus de jure. You know, their fictional construction of lawlessness is no law at all and has no bearing or weight on justice, nor does it have any bearing or weight on anything that would change we the people as a republic, a natural law republic with a natural law constitution. And the way we fight this lawlessness is with the law, and it seems that you're in the process of doing something of that nature. And we all need to be doing this. As a matter of fact, you know, we have a few cases that I'd like to discuss in the near future that we need to deal with as a people together, but we have to be more organized before we can do this. You know, we have about 10,000 members here with National Liberty Alliance, but most of those people are not very active, and we're trying to now encourage them and kind of push them out a little bit. we're also starting to tour the state here in New York and probably Connecticut and Jersey and maybe even Pennsylvania, or at least parts thereof of Pennsylvania, and also encouraging people to step up as partners with us to bring the message of the Committees of Safety to every county in America. And I mentioned earlier, you know, that Jefferson had said, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And that is a key point. I can speak here particularly about New York, but this is true about every state of the union. New York State, let's start off with a county in New York. And every county in New York is controlled by four people. Every single county is controlled by four people. They rule over about 200 to 300 individuals. They're called committeemen. They're statutory committeemen created by statute. And ultimately, they really aren't. It just has the appearance of creation by statute. And it's controlled by party bosses, which, again, is four individuals, particularly a chairman. And they owe their allegiance to four individuals on the state level. So every county in New York State owes an allegiance to four individuals on a state level, which has one chairman, which is the party boss of the entire state ultimately. And they too owe their allegiance to someone up on the federal level, probably more than four individuals, but it really gets down to one individual ultimately. It's always the chairman. They do this in Congress. They've done it in the Senate. The chairman can close things down and do crazy things, which in a just society, that could never happen. But you know, we've become an unjust society in a sense. And so, of course, those individuals on the federal level, they owe their allegiance to the powers that be, the New World Order, whatever you want to call it, the deep state, which again is controlled by the New World Order. And so we don't have a free political process. We either have a choice for criminals on the right or the criminals on the left, whatever it is that they give us. And they make the appearance as if it's lawful. They make the appearance as if it's just. They make the appearance as if it's democratic. They make the appearance as if the people on the lower end voted things in, which they didn't, because the whole thing's decided earlier on. The party bosses decide who's going to get on that ticket. And then all the slaves, which is a couple of hundred committeemen in each county, walk the papers to get these people on the ballot. Well, look it, we the people need about 200 people in every county, on the average, and that'll grow greater and quicker. You know, they claim to be elected on the committeeman process, which again is a whole facade to begin with, and there is an elected process on that. And we were pursuing that, but then I come to realize, I had an epiphany on this, that we shouldn't be controlled by statute, because being controlled by statute really lays us back into being controlled by party bosses. And to go through a process to take this whole system back would be an impossibility, ultimately. It'd be a really tough job to do. And but look at the way it is the people represent, the people decide. And again, anybody who wants to participate, whether it's 200 or 2,000 people in the county, good for it. Anybody that wants to come in and decide on who we're going to put into power as far as putting them onto the ballot for the people to vote them into power, you know, they're welcome to come to the interviews and ask questions and participate. And again, we get back to government by the majority that participates. So They're controlling this entire political process by about 200 people per county, which, again, is controlled, totally controlled by party bosses. They do what they're told. After a while, a lot of people get sick, and they just leave the process. They realize that they've been duped. But then they pull in some other suckers, and it just goes on and on and on and on. And but the reason we need about 200 people, roughly speaking, is because we have to walk the papers and get the necessary signatures, the necessary number of signatures for each of the individuals that we put onto the ballot. And so we the people can do that. We could do it without being elected. We don't have to be elected, nor should we be elected and controlled by statutes. We also can remove these people from office, whether we put them in by walking their papers, or if a Republican Party or a Democratic Party or some other party puts them in, that's fine. If they break the law, if they break their oath, they violate their oaths, they overstep their jurisdiction or authorities, we can correct them. And if they refuse to take the correction, we can remove them. Okay?
With
the power of recall. The power of recall. Hold on a minute, Ron. The power of recall. So we can recall these people. The other thing we could do is we could also indict these people. So that's why it's so important for people to get involved in this Committee of Safety and to get it going within their counties. The other thing is there are two power structures in the United States, and whoever controls those two power structures controls our government. One is the political process, controlled by party bosses, ultimately leads right up to the powers that be through the Bar Association, because ultimately they control them through statutory processes. On the other side is the judicial process, and that is controlled again by judges in this case, okay, and lawyers, and ultimately it goes to the bar. The bar controls it all on both sides, and they control the whole process. So the powers that be through the bar and through other processes, through the judges on the one side and the party bosses on the other side, they control government and have government by their desire. That's why we, the people, need to take it back. And the only way we could do that is through committees of safety and forming our common law grand juries. We have to get administrators for each county. We're working with five administrators, four of them working as administrators. One is a paralegal secretary who fits in as an administrator also when needed. And then we have grand juries and trial juries that are unbiased, who are taught the true law of the land and to understand that they are the sovereigns and they get to decide the law. And until we do that and get enough counties going to be able to control a state and enough counties going to control, or enough states going to control the federal government, we're going to continue to just to be controlled by these evil people. And we have a great opportunity because of what's coming up soon with the military and big changes. We need to educate ourselves now, and we need to get into that process. Now, Ron, you wanted to add something or correct something? Go right ahead.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. When you say indictment, indictment only works for district attorneys. When a grand jury makes a presentment to a district attorney, it's not an indictment. If a grand jury unappointed by a district attorney makes an indictment, then they're the word slips my mind.
Well, we do agree on that. We understand the difference between a presentment and an indictment. Most people understand an indictment, but a presentment is an indictment also. It's just done on the will of the jury and opposed to someone bringing that potential indictment up to the jury and requesting an indictment. But let's step back a little bit here on the attorneys. No attorney should ever, no district attorney, none of them should ever go before a grand jury and request an indictment. The only people that have the power or the authority to address a grand jury is A, the sheriff, B, the coroner, and in some cases, the people themselves. Okay, but generally speaking, it's the sheriff and the coroner. And the people, you know, through the administrators could address the grand jury, but the administrator should properly go through the sheriff. And all the information concerning an indictment is given to the sheriff, who then has an impartial view of the whole process and could decide whether they want to bring it to the jury. Because look, if you have a case where they don't have true proof, okay, or they don't, you know, anything that really would potentially convict the individual. And more importantly than that is criminal intent. And many, many cases go whether the facts are there to back it up or not, but criminal intent is not there. And if you can't prove criminal intent, there is no crime, because there must be criminal intent. And a lot of people are prosecuted without criminal intent being proven. And that's a big problem. And the reason for that is because these prosecutors are out of control. They're doing things on favors, prosecuting people on request or demand by maybe judges or other powerful individuals that is upsetting the status quo. And so they're coming in, and some of them just trying to get a name for themselves. They don't care whether the person's innocent or not. They don't care about nothing. They just want their ham sandwich, and that's an insult. And we should take that as an insult, and we should ram that ham sandwich back down the prosecutor, let's put it that way. We have to take this whole process up, but you are absolutely correct. There is a difference between a presentment, which is an indictment brought to, you know, against an individual, a group of individuals, and by the jury, the grand jury themselves, without it being brought before them. And of course, the regular indictment is an indictment where it's produced from whatever source it comes from, but should be brought by the sheriff or the coroner to produce the evidence and information before the grand jury, which they then can make the decision whether they think an indictment is an appropriate thing or not. So,
another point.
Agreed.
Okay. Another point I have is jural assembly as juxtaposed to a safety committee. Now, we find assembly in the First Amendment, but where do you find safety committee in the Constitution?
Well, we find committees of safety in our founding fathers' process, but they used it not only to rule over themselves for a government that was distant and wasn't doing the things necessary and providing for the necessary protections and needs, whether it's political or judicial or whatever, to the people. So what our founding fathers did long before 1776, and a matter of fact, this process was used in the very beginning when people were migrating to the potential colonies at the time. So it goes back into the 1600s when the Pilgrims were coming over and they formed committees of safety. Committees of safety continued in this nation. Our founding fathers used committee of safety in order to call forth the First Continental Congress and the Second Continental Congress. The committees of safety came together and formed the necessary process and structure in order to govern the potential United States, the colonies, during the time of the war, all the way up until the Constitution was produced. And it was through the individuals who were parts of the committees of safety that put all of that together, and many of them ran for office to become presidents and hold different positions in office over after the 1789 Constitution took effect. George Washington was part of the Committee of Safety. Paul Revere was a part of the Committee of Safety. He was part of a committee of correspondence, is what Paul Revere was, and that continued on. And I was saying that it morphed, and to some degree it did morph into what we see as the committee man, because our founding fathers used the process even when our government was in structure in place in order to take control of the political process, take control of the judicial process, and maintain it so that we can have government by consent. George Washington spoke of the political problems and this process that would be destroyed, the engines of freedom, which he referred to as that was the committees of safety, and they were seized by party bosses, by individuals, by factions, which were parties. They created a Republican Party and a Democratic Party as time went on. But there were other parties involved. There was arguments. And Jefferson even spoke about this and was really disturbed about it himself because they were trying to make him a separatist back then and referring to him. And he spoke about being a Republican. He spoke about being a Federalist. And when he became president, he really brought the message out to say, hey, we're all Republicans. We're all Federalists because that's who we are as a people. We're a republic, the people of a republic, and we do have a federalist system set up, which a limited authority and power has been given to a federal government for certain things, but ultimately the liberty of each state, the sovereignty of each state was to survive, each one of them as an independent sovereign state, okay? And so it's throughout our whole history. It's the way our government was put together. It was the way our government was meant to be controlled. And they robbed it from us just like they robbed everything else. They statutorized the committee man and made him a control under a party boss. And we've lost total control of our political process. And we've also lost total control of our judicial process. We need to control that through juries, grand juries and trial juries. So that's the history of the committees of safety and where it comes from and how we need to use it to bring it back. Because it's more than just a jural society. It's more than just controlling the jury. We must control the political process. And that's
the jural assembly, John.
Well, the jural assembly. All right, the jural assembly. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything wrong with that. If people want to do that, they can do that. But we still need to gather people together in every county so that we can deal with the political process. And we also need control over the calling of the jurist. But we can't let these political animals control the jury process to orientate the jury, which really is destructive, because all they do really is stack the juries in order to win cases and just destroy the people that are coming into their courts and destroying justice and the whole process.
That's for sure. That's why we have to move into a de jure form of government. And when we're talking about government, all we have now is incorporated governance. And to remove that seems to me to be the key thing to do. And as long as we're still dealing with the de facto and filing cases into the de facto instead of making our own de jure court and our own de jure grand jury and our own de jure Article 3, Amendment 7 courts, until that starts happening, we're just playing in their game.
Well,
not find justice in their courts.
Well, look, at it. First of all, it's not their courtrooms. It's not their court buildings. It's what we put together. We, the people, pay the bill for that. We pay taxes to support that. We pay for the electricity there, for all of the technology in there. We pay for the people who work in there. We pay their salaries. We paid to build the building. We paid for all of that. That belongs to us. They robbed us. And you know what? When you catch a robber, and you deal with them and you put them in jail, you take back the property that they stole. And we're going into that process right now. That property is going to be taken back. And that's why it is so important right now for the people to be mustering together, to come together as committees of safety in every county, be ready to receive that power and that authority that is rightfully ours to receive and to exercise.
No, so, you've got to take it, John. You don't.
That's right. We will take it.
We
will
take it.
You can't take it without knowledge, though. We have to be educated. That's what we're doing, is educating the people, mustering the people together and planning to do it. And they can start taking it back right now, because once you get a committee of safety going, you get a couple of hundred people, trust me, you will have all the tools, all the power, and all the authority to take control of every government agency connected onto that county. And when you work county to county, you start to work into senatorial districts, congressional districts, town districts, I mean, all the different governments that make up the state, okay? And when so you got enough counties in the state working at this, you now take the state government back. And when you take that state government back, then you're working with other states to take that federal back. Now, we could do this quite quickly if the people start to muster together and start doing what is their duty to do. Meanwhile, we need to be filing cases in court. We need to be hammering the letter, the papers onto the doors of these courts, particularly the United States Supreme Court. Every nail on every paper and every message that we send into the court is just another nail in their coffin, because it is all evidence. And at some point, when we get to the other side and these people are finally put in prison that deserve to be in prison, and we the people will deal with what's left, because then we will take power and authority and we will let them know what needs to be done. We'll start removing judges. We'll start on the state level, particularly where they're elected, which then eventually we'll get into the federal level. But it takes the people to get educated and start exercising their duty, which is their responsibility. And of course, that's what we're trying to do here at National Liberty Alliance.
I agree with you on most of that, but I think that the number of people that we need to do the job, we already have, and that number of people already knows at least 50% more than what they need to know to do the job.
What number is that?
And once you have a preponderance of evidence, it's not wise to keep looking for more. It's time to take action.
Well, look, there are a lot of people being injured that need to be repaired. You know, they need to receive some kind of a justice here. restitution must be in place. There are people losing their homes, okay, to these mortgage companies. There are people in jail that are not being heard when habeas corpuses are put together. That's a crime, as a matter of fact. A judge that refuses and continues to refuse to hear habeas corpuses proves himself to be a tyrant and needs to be ultimately not only removed from office, that's where jail, I think jail is for that purpose right there.
But yeah, but John, you don't need a judge, John. You don't need a judge for a habeas corpus. That comes from your civilian court of record.
Well, I understand that. No, but basically, a judge has a certain job to do, okay?
Yeah, and he gets to do everything less than $20. That's what judges do.
Hold on a minute, okay? A judge has a job to do. He's to operate within his jurisdiction, and he's to operate under the Constitution. And there is a process of equity that is written out for the process of a judge when he receives a paper of a habeas corpus, which is a normal process to do because we have set forth the process to write that equity. Okay, and so the judge is then supposed to follow a process of law of due process. And if there is no evidence there, if there is no indictment, let's take all of these people that were arrested in Washington on January 6th. We'll actually arrest them later, I guess, but on January 6th, okay? I went through the paperwork on that, not every one of them, but I've just scattered through and went through this one, that one, and the other one. Number one, there's no sworn affidavit, okay? There is a complaint by a federal agent that's not even sworn to, so there's no sworn affidavit. Right there, there is no court case because there can be no court case without a sworn affidavit. There must be a sworn affidavit.
That's not true, John.
Well, there could be the body of evidence. Hold on. There could be the body of evidence. I would agree with that. But the most important thing is an indictment. They have no indictments. They have papers they're calling indictments signed by a U.S. attorney, and there is no foreman that has signed off on that paperwork. So there are no indictments, and there's no sworn affidavit. And if a federal agent is going to act on a statement, claim that is to be the evidence, it has to be sworn to. I mean, sure, if you have a dead body before you, it's the body of evidence right there. I mean, you don't need an affidavit to know a murder had taken place, and you start gathering the evidence, okay? But generally speaking, when someone says that someone done something and they did this and that, broke something, injured somebody or something or so on, then that's got to be a sworn affidavit without which there is no court case.
Yeah, but what you're talking about in D.C., D.C. is not a state. D.C. is not covered by the Constitution.
Sure it is.
D.C. No, it's not. It's not one of the several states.
No, I understand that, but it is collectively, it belongs to the people.
Doesn't. It belongs to Congress.
What are you talking about?
Well, if you read the Constitution, it belongs to Congress assembled. They made it.
Well, it's
they invented
it's the process,
and it has nothing to do with the people. The people are not involved in that. And
well, hold on.
Wait one just a moment, please.
Yeah.
I heard you say earlier the preamble to the Constitution. The preamble of the Constitution was placed there without it ever being ratified by any of the 12 states. It's a fiction. It's pretend. It was put in there by the people of the United States, which are the ones that live in D.C.
The preamble to the Constitution is indeed part of the 1789 Constitution. Sure it was.
It was never ratified.
You're going to have to show me that proof. I'd like to see that proof. Before you go any further with this conversation on that issue, get the proof. You can come back next week after you get the proof, and we'll discuss it at that point. I'm not aware of anything of that nature, number one. Number two, it is clearly we the people that ordained and established this Constitution for the United States of America. That is clear. That was the intent of our founding fathers. If you go back, and I'm sure you've done the research, Okay, but as far as the federal, the land where the federal government has a seat, okay, 10 miles square and so on and so forth, or 10 miles or something like that, I think it's 10 square miles is supposed to have been given for that purpose, okay? Anything that takes place on that land, okay, ultimately still is under the law of the Constitution. It's under we the people. It's under the law of the land. You can't take that away from that. These people are liable as much as anyone else would be on any other state, any other state. Okay, now it is a piece of land set aside for the purpose for the seat of government. That is clear. It's in the Constitution. It's written up. But it can't be a lawlessness place. It can't be a place that has the law of civil law, or, you know, from the powers that be, the New World Order, or wherever you want to put there, the deep state. No, they don't control. They do control that, unfortunately. Okay, it's de facto. Okay, but ultimately it belongs to the people. That belongs to the states, which belongs to the people. That's who the control of it. Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. I know it's not, but that's
maybe
the way
it's supposed to be that way.
Well, and we're going to take it back and make it that way. You can't go take people and arrest them that go to visit that piece of land, that place where Congress and their federal government has a seat of power at.
They
because
do
they
it.
Go and visit there. You just can't arrest them lawlessly.
They do it.
But of course they do it, because they've seized control. 1871 was the beginning of that process of seizing control.
No, 1861 is when
Well,
it started.
I heard you say that, and I do agree that there's things going on long before that. Ultimately, you can go all the way back to 1776. You can go back to even further beyond that, as 1750, when the Bar Association was planted on the shores, right in the body within the colonies. Okay,
no,
that
we had a constitutional form of government, a reliable constitutional form of government from 1819 to 1859. We lost it in 1860 when South Carolina left. We've been in color law since March 1861, period.
Look, I know that there have been problems, and there's probably a lot of things I don't even know about that have taken place. There are a lot of things I do that know about that took place. And it does go, look, it goes back even before the rebellion, before the revolution. Again, it goes back to 1750 is where it goes back to. But and probably, before that too, because in 1750 is when the king decided he had to destroy the judicial process here in the colonies, because he was having problems with the colonists. Already, Benjamin Franklin, early on, was creating a ruckus that caused problems, and the king wasn't happy about it. And that, of course, built up until 1776. But look at the king and the pope, they covenanted together to destroy the processes that were taking place in the colonies, and eventually what took place as states after 1789. And matter of fact, it might have been 1818, where the Pope and the King got together and covenanted to destroy the political and judicial process here in the United States, and signed letters of marque, and gave powers to the Jesuits to destroy things, and who really went through lawless things also, and the Bar Association, which eventually became the American Bar Association. I don't remember what year that was in. It was 1870-something, I think. But 1871 is when they actually created the structure of this whole thing, which was the Organic Act.
Incorporated the United
right,
States.
Right, in 1871.
Yeah.
But all this stuff was taking place and worked on earlier on. I agree with you.
Much earlier.
Yes, it goes back even before the revolution. Well, actually, before at least 1776. But again, you know, all of these things. Okay, that's when they started to try to get this into paper and start to build upon the 1871 Organic Act was the building of the statutory prison that we live in today, where people
exactly.
think is the law. Okay,
we
I'm in agreement
move it back
with all
to the 33 states and the 17 territories before we can get back to law instead of color of law.
All right. Well, look, with that, why don't you do this? If there's a few things you think you disagree with me on, why don't you collect some information, get it to me, and we can discuss an item here or an item there over time next Monday and the Monday after and so on, because I don't want to take too much time up because there are other people who want to get onto the mic and I need to pass
things
over to
Rob. Thank you very much for your time, John.
But I'm interested. I am interested in correction, and I'm interested, of course, in anything additional that might assist in our understanding and knowledge. We don't spend too much time on that part of the process, but we do discuss it because we really have to spend a lot more time on how to fix this problem and get the people educated and informed and understand the powers and the authorities that the people have.
That's what we're working on too, fixing the problem. Thank you.
Give me some information on that. You mentioned something in, what was that, 1861, I think, with Carolina?
1860 for Carolina, South Carolina.
Now give me information.
And 1861. I will. I'll email it to you.
Okay. Send it to mail at National Liberty Alliance, and the leadership will get it also to be able to look at it.
Send it to who?
Mail, M-A-I-L.
Gotcha. Thank you.
National Liberty Alliance, because the whole leadership gets that mail, and they get to able to look at that stuff, too.
I'll do that.
All right, Ron. Back to you. Thank you. Back to you, Gerard. You got the mic.
Okay. Let me get my voice back here. Who was the lady you were talking to? Was that Janet before?
Yes, I believe it was Janet there.
Okay, well, we got...
You'd be better to answer that question. Go ahead.
Somebody here, Freed or Farid from...
from California. But yeah. I don't know why when people come into the queue, it's not necessarily stays in the order that they came in. I try to keep an eye on who should be next, and Janet should be next, by the way.
Well, I could open her up.
Yeah, take Janet, and then you can move to Farid and go down the line from there.
Okay, I'm going to open. Janet, you are opened up, and had a couple questions about the whole vaccine thing. First of all, when they tell you that you have to expand upon your religious exemption, that's a fallacy. That's a lie. They cannot require that. You don't need a priest. You don't need, what are they, they're going to tell you have a bona fide or not bona fide religion? They don't have the authority. They're actually breaking the law when they do that. And if you have that in writing, you should save it, because if they said, we want more explanation, they just committed treason by doing that. They're not allowed to do that. And I know they do it, but you want to correct them. The other thing you want to correct is, number one, you got to remind them that this is not a law. That executive orders by governors are not laws. They're emergency actions, and they're limited, and they have to be renewed. I guarantee you.
Gerard, back off your mic a little bit. You're overmodulating. Just pull your mic a little bit further away.
Okay. But I guarantee you that. They didn't even follow their own statutory rules to make these emergency executive orders. They're only supposed to last 30 days, and then they need to renew them. And there's a very tight parameter there that they have to run under, and they're not doing it because we the people are not calling them out on it. So you definitely got to say, look, first of all, this is not a law, and it's an aberration. Number two is, they can't require you to get an experimental shot. That's under Nuremberg.
Yes, it's also
under the Constitution. So when they are requiring you under any kind of mandate to get something that's experimental, it's already been proven in multiple countries, even not only America but in the Nuremberg Code with Germany and Hitler and all that. That's why those laws were put into place. That's why all those countries signed on to that. So this is a violation of those acts, and it's a violation of our Constitution, and you have to remind them of that, because if you don't remind them of it, They'll ignore it. They'll ignore it.
That is true.
So, listen. This whole emergency use authorization, the EAU. This shot is experimental until 2023 at the earliest. So how do they think they have the authority to force you to do it? It's just a suggestion. They cannot force you to do it. And any employer that tells you that you have to do it, they're open to a lawsuit. And what we should be doing is we should be sending them notices of liability that we intend to sue them for taking this action and having them pay. The other thing is that they are going to be liable for the drug companies and all these ones that think that they have immunity, which they really don't. The fact of the matter is even under the act that supposedly gave them immunity, I think Reagan put it in way back when with the vaccine mandates. He gave the drug companies immunity from damages if their shots hurt anybody, which he didn't even really have the power to do that. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. The fact of the matter is they have committed felonies to get these vaccines in. They have RICO. There's a very good video that we have on videosanctuary.com that Ollie puts up. And now you can get these videos. They're hard to get, I should say. You can't usually get them because they take them down. YouTube takes them down. But David Martin is the investigator, the guy. He's a doctor. He's a doctorate, and he's a investigator, and he's a computer programmer, and he's just amazing. But he has outlined the RICO and the felonies that they committed to put these shots in, and he shows how they're all connected, how they all have a conflict of interest, all of them. Fauci, Gates, all of them are making money on this. You know, they sit on each other's boards. They rotate the board. You know, the CEOs of the drug companies, they take a sabbatical, and then they sit on the FDA. And after they get done on the FDA, they go back onto the drug companies. It's a whole fiasco. The whole thing is RICO, and it reeks of all kinds of fraud. So we need to call them out on that. And if you go watch the tape up there, you go to videosanctuary.com under COVID, and then look up the ones with David. He's the guy with the bow tie on, little bald guy with a bow tie, and he reveals a lot of this. The other thing is we have a video on there of Dr. Judy Mikovits that shows that they have in their own documents she's discovered, and Judy's another amazing scientist and researcher and whistleblower. Fauci had her put in jail for a long time, and he tried to ruin her because she refused to withdraw her thesis, her college thesis, which revealed that they created AIDS in a laboratory and proved that it was a man-made disease. All these diseases are man-made diseases, and when people find out the fraud, look at it. The reason we're getting cancer and Parkinson's and polio and all this is from the vaccinations that they're giving us that's ruining our immune system, and that's a fact. Their whole germ theory needs to be turned on its head. It is turned on its head. So she found in their own paperwork that recently they had approved hydroxychloroquine as a vaccination for COVID-19. So basically, there's a video up there where she explains that there's an affidavit that you fill out, and what you do is you say that you're getting your boosters, which is hydroxychloroquine, once a month. That's the same as being vaccinated. And it completely bypasses all their bull, because you can use their own words and their own documents to show that you're in compliance if you're taking hydroxychloroquine. It's the same as getting a booster. So there's a lot of stuff that's coming out, and you need to watch those things. You should go on Video Sanctuary, COVID, and watch the movies that are up there, and make sure you watch David Morgan and Judy Mikovits, because they give good information. I'm going to make an outline at some point, because I just watched them recently, so I'm going off of memory, but somebody needs to write this stuff down and go step by step of how she explains what you need to do to get out of having to take the vaccine, which they cannot require you to take because it's experimental, and that's it. That's the long and the short of it. And you know what they say? The truth will prevail as long as somebody proclaims it. Everybody says, oh, you're in the wrong court. You're not doing this right or that right. I don't care. If you don't proclaim the truth, whether it's in their court or the wrong court or something, you have no chance. We have seen bogus courts that had juries in them like they had for the Malheur thing and the Bundys. The jury said not guilty because they got tired of the baloney that they were pulling. So if you can get a jury of your peers, you can prevail, even in their corrupt courts. And we have cases that have prevailed in even their courts, because we still have, that's how powerful the jury and the grand jury is. So just remember that. And you don't have to qualify your religious convictions. They cannot put a test on religious convictions. That's a violation of your First Amendment right. And you have to state that. You have to say, oh, no, I don't have to prove anything. There's no bona fide religion. The government doesn't have a list of bona fide religions, of bogus religions. That's totally against the whole idea of religious freedom right there. Who the heck are they to tell you that you're holding a conviction in a certain religion? That's way, way beyond what their authority and their power is. But you have to you have to call them out on it.
Yes. Okay, that's perfect. That was really, really helpful. Thank you so much. And I will look up the videos on Video Sanctuary as well. I didn't know about the hydroxychloroquine.
Yeah, videosanctuary.com, and then go to the COVID tab. And the COVID has, there's row 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and there's all these separate videos. They're all good, but the real specific information is what Judy Mikovits and David Martin, really dynamic, great people, and Del Bigtree is on there. He's very good. He's a journalist and an investigative reporter, does such a great job. There's new information coming out every single day. I don't know if you heard, but there was a CEO of one of these major drug companies that just committed suicide and left a note and said he no longer could stand the genocide of the COVID-19 vaccines, that it's genocide, and he killed himself. So that's pretty good.
No, thank you so much. This was really helpful. I had a feeling that them questioning and asking for additional paperwork around the religious exemption was a violation of the First Amendment rights. I'm still learning. These calls are really helpful for me to learn, because I never realized that we have so much power as individuals and the Constitution is behind us. So I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, truly.
I actually was against people getting religious exemptions because it gives credibility to the so-called vaccine, which is not a vaccine. It's an experimental shot. It's DNA, DNA experimentation. And by getting a religious exemption, what you're saying is, okay, this might be, I recognize this as a valid vaccine, but it's against my religion. You see, to me, that has a bad taste in my mouth. You know what I mean? So,
I see.
You're saying, well, my religion won't let me do it. And that could be true because they do use aborted baby cell lines. That's a fact. It's in their own paperwork. You know, and that's what's nice about David Martin. He uses their own paperwork, their own documents to hang them, because it's all out there. They put, you know, I think they're proud of this stuff, and they put it out there. But ultimately, it's going to be what puts the noose around their neck when we get into a Nuremberg 2 type trial thing, which is coming. Believe me, it's coming. And it's only a, it's only a matter of time before the whole charade falls apart. And they know it, and so they're, that's why they're so over, you know, getting so overhanded, because they're scared. If they see the writing on the wall that people are waking up and they're starting to win cases, and judges are getting scared, and so they're whirling for the people, you know, last ditch, you know, trying to vindicate themselves, you know. So it's a good time to be in court right now, I think. So I'm
going to.
So just check that out, and hopefully maybe next week I can give you more specific information on that stuff, you know, maybe an outline of how to fill that paperwork out that Judy's talking about to prove that you are in fact vaccinated with hydroxychloroquine. And they also just recently recommended ivermectin as a treatment for COVID, which they hate, because that those two things cure all kinds of diseases, including cancer, and they've held it from the people. They've committed crimes against humanity by holding these therapies from us, and then giving us these horrible noxious things that the drug companies have put out, they're all controlled, they're all part of a cabal, and they're all making money. You know, there's another woman that does wonderful work. Her name is Polly St. George, Amazing Polly.
Okay.
And it's very good to listen to her, because she's the one that explains the connections between everything. And the last video that Dr. David Martin did, I said he did a Polly, Amazing Polly job, because he drew lines and put the names all these people that are behind us and put their names out in public, which they don't want. They're paying Google to keep their names off the internet. That's how bad these guys are. So it won't be long. Anyway, thank you, Janet.
I really appreciate it.
Okay. So I'm going to open up Farad from California. Go ahead, Farid.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Hi. Hi there. Thank you so much. I enjoyed the very lively interaction between John and the other gentleman. I think his name was Ron, and you as well, Gerard, and all the other participants. Tomorrow, as you know, I have a court hearing. I have something like 30 motions, pretrial motions. The judge just railroads over me, right, left, and center, and strike. So far, about 20 of the 30 motions. I asked for court observers. A friend of mine just called me and said that there hasn't been any notice to her, but she's aware she's going to participate. But I wonder if there are other people who may want to participate and just listen in. It's just through a phone call, which I provided through the NLA's website. And the second question that I have, or, you know, some food for thoughts, I haven't had any time to research it to see, once you file or go through the motions of recalling a court administrator, there are basically no judges except the Supreme Court, because they are not ordained and established under Article 3, Section 1. So if you file, the question is, if you file for a recall, or at least initiate the recall, because it's quite tedious and quite, you know, tens of thousands of signatures have to be gathered, and, you know, you need a team. You cannot do this by a handful or a dozen or two dozens. And the person who was recalled, Judge Persky, a couple of years ago, the recall was heavily financed by, you know, Deep State and others through the Stanford, and there were a whole bunch of other people supporting that. And I actually liked the fact that he was recalled, since, you know, the less of these people on bench, the better people are. But all I'm trying to share with you, I'm trying to look for strategies. I'm trying to see how I might be able to piggyback on the recall petition or motion, or at least a notice that, look, I'm trying to gather people to recall you because you're simply railroading me right, left, and center. So I look forward to hearing your thoughts and benefiting from the discussion. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't know what their statutory rules are for recall today. I mean, they don't even like to admit that you can recall somebody. I mean, and you're right. Usually, it takes a certain percentage of the ones that put them in office to sign a petition before they'll even consider it. John has his own thoughts on the way recall should be, and as far as letting the committee men run it, the ones that carry the petitions to get the guy in the office in the first place. And technically, the committee men could do that if you could get the committee men together to run a petition or carry the petitions. I mean, it's almost a no-brainer to use the committee men on a recall. Of course, you're going to have to sort of campaign it to get them sympathetic to that. You know what I mean? You know, you have to educate them, or they're not going to do it. That's the problem. Nobody's educated today on this process. But Don has often said that the committee men can run a recall on a candidate, and there's been a couple of them. Who was it recently that they were looking to recall, and he just barely made it through? And of course, you know, you can't trust them because they're running all the machines that they're doing the recall on. So just like they stole votes from Donald Trump, how can you trust anything that's going through these machines like Dominion and that? If you're running a recall and you're running petitions and they're counting them with these machines, you might as well forget about it. You know, if you can't have paper ballots, that's my suggestion, that it's set up with paper ballots. And this may be happening now because with all this fraud and what's going on with the recounts and stuff, there is going to be a solution to this, and I think it's going to be paper ballots, to be honest with you, and there's no reason that we can't have paper ballots. You know, they like everything on computers because they can control it and they get it instantaneously, but of course they can, with the flick of a button, they can erase everything or change it, and that's why we need to get away from that. So you're going to say, I think if you look to these states with the contested elections, I think that's where your answer is going to be, because I think that they're going to set up an easier way to check the ballots and to do recalls, and it's going to help everybody, I guess, is what I mean.
Yeah, I think the recall of that judge here in Santa Clara County was, I was 100% against them, but I think it was more politically motivated. I think, you know, they put so much effort into it just because, you know, whatever he did, which wasn't proper. But I think we will have some issues in enforcing. I think the ideas are good. I think we need some muscle. We need some means of enforcing the law. And
exactly. And that's why we're pushing for the sheriffs to be the top law enforcement official, because a sheriff can enforce the law. He can, you know, he can run something up through from the grand jury, and he can assemble him, and he can do arrests and whatever else he has to do when crimes have been committed, when there's crime. A lot of what's going on with these politicians are felonies. They are crimes. You know, these guys are criminals. No doubt.
Yeah.
For
example, I've been to San Jose Police as well as to U.S. Attorney. I've been to Sheriff, and I have ample evidence. It's really I'm not trying to even make it complicated. There has to be two parties in a case. There is no plaintiff, and there's proof positive in the case that they are through a racketeering attempting to steal my home on 25 years. And they've been doing this across the... But in my case, I have ample evidence that there is no plaintiff. So he systematically, he calls my jurisdictional challenges that, look, I want to see that this plaintiff has a bank account. I want to see. He calls it discovery, and he says discovery time is passed. I said, okay, let's open it. He said, no, we have to go to trial. I said, look, there has I'm challenging the jurisdiction of the court. So that once the jurisdiction is challenged, you can't just, you know, railroad over me.
That's
you have to determine it.
Yeah, go on at that point, exactly.
Yeah, so, but...
But they do. I know.
Yeah, they do. I mean, this is so basic, right? So I to put some fire under him, I went to all this law enforcement, and they just passed me back and forth between them. They said, you have to go to sheriff. I go to sheriff, they don't do anything or don't return my calls. So I go to San Jose police. I went to U.S. attorney. I went to FBI. I went to everybody. And I'm just running out of options here.
It's a tough situation, but I personally think that there's much to be said for the notices of liability that Empower Group is using. They've had some higher-up people and even some judges left because it holds them personally responsible to major fines, and they have to answer that paperwork. So I think we should look into maybe perfecting the notice of liability, which actually attacks them personally. And the judges are, oh, well, I have immunity. Well, no, you don't. You only have immunity if you're operating under the law. But yeah. When, like you said, they're completely committing fraud and RICO and all that, they're not immune at all. And that notice of liability brings it forward.
Right.
They have to answer that. So,
Is there a way that we can maybe make sure that my request for court observers for tomorrow, 9 o'clock our time, which is 12 o'clock your time, would get...
Where are you? You're in California, but what county are you in?
Santa Clara County,
Santa
Northern
Clara.
California. Yeah.
I don't know who's doing the reporters. I'll ask Janet who's down there. Because, you know, we got to get members that are local enough that they can show up, you know?
Yeah, it's only by phone because I'm attending by phone and I've circulated...
By phone, you know, you can get people out that aren't necessarily in the county. They won't know the difference.
Right. All I want is the more ears that I have so that they hear the crimes that are happening against me. So in case I need some affidavits, they could... watch for those affidavits because I intend to escalate it.
Do you have a phone number that they can dial in? Did they give you the number yet?
Yes, I actually emailed through your website. I submitted two phone numbers. One is my own conference call number, which is free, and another one is provided by the court. And they could call in and just listen in.
Right.
You want me to give it to you now? I can give it to you now if you wish.
I think what you should do is send it to Jan, and he can shoot off an email to an alert to anybody. Well, they don't have to be in Santa Clara. It can be anybody, any NLA member that's available during that time. I don't care if they're in your county or not. They won't know the difference. You want to fill that board up. That's what you want to do. I don't know if they can tell where the calls are coming from. I don't think they can. I don't think they bother. You know, I mean, it's nice to get local people if you can. But even if you don't, like you said, the more ears that are on there, the more they're going to behave themselves. You know, they only work good when they're in the dark. So if you could put a light on it, you can. As a matter of fact, give the number now. Anybody that's listening to this tonight, you should take this down and if you're available, give the number and the time of the trial, the dial in number and the time, and maybe we can send an email out specifically for, you know, especially people that are in California. It'd be nice to get, you know, a bunch of NLA members that are in California to call in. Are you there, or did I lose you? Hello. I don't hear anything. Does anybody hear me? Did I get disconnected?
Yeah, I hear you. I think he fell off.
Oh, well, if he gets... Go back in the queue and I'll open you up when I see you. But in the meantime, we're running out of time here. We got like only 2 minutes. And if we don't get to this tonight, I would send Jan that number, and maybe we could send an email out, a group email with the information so people can call in tomorrow. The time of the trial and the number to call in. Okay, I'm gonna open Amy up and try to see if I can answer her question in 2 minutes or less. Okay. Go ahead, Amy.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay. This is in relation to the gal earlier with the workplace mandate. I had a similar situation where I was getting text messages and annoying emails asking me to update my status. So I wrote back that that it's a violation of my privacy. I'm not updating any status.
That's a violation of HIPAA, too.
Yeah, I said it violates HIPAA privacy law. It violates the Americans with Disability Act by presupposing someone has a medical disability without any evidence to support the presupposition. And then I put a link to the thing that the OSHA was shot down. The OSHA mandate, which is a mandate which is unlawful, was shot down for having grave statutory and constitutional issues. And then I said it's an inalienable human right, given to me by God, the right to privacy and to be left alone. So I basically told him to F off.
Right. And you have to mention those things. You have to, actually say it. You know, state the law, state the thing, because...
I put that all in my email, and basically they haven't bothered me.
Well, that's good.
So
that's a good idea. That's good. That's another, somewhat of a victory. Now, this is for your work?
Yeah.
Well, biggest thing with them, and I tell everybody, don't you dare quit your job, make them fire you. And if you can, get them to give it in writing. They got all kinds of Orwellian things like involuntary furlough and all this other crap they come up with to try to say they're not firing you when they're actually firing you for not taking the shot, So.
Interestingly, I work for a company that's in India. I don't think they have all the mandates, but they're trying to comply with they're trying to keep this database of information on people's status because there are a lot of consultants and they travel, and there's
probably getting federal money, so it probably puts a hook in them.
No, they're an Indian company, but yeah, they do have office in Richardson, Texas. And the client is a bank in New York, so it's the bank that's mandating it, I think, that was putting the pressure on this company, which is in India, which doesn't really, I don't think that India really supports any of this stuff,
No, especially since they stopped giving the shot and they got it under control with ivermectin, so they know.
Yeah.
I don't think this whole thing is gonna hold up much longer. So the longer, whatever you can do to forestall them is good, because their days are numbered. I believe their days are numbered.
Yep.
Of course, we don't know what kind of crazy crap they're going to pull because they're getting desperate. But anyway,
just shocks me is how many people just blindly just follow along with it. I was posting this stuff on chat, the company chat with 300-400 people, just to try and, socialize it a little bit,
Well, that's good. You did good work. Anyway, that's what we need to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for calling in. We appreciate it, and thank everybody. Thank you, everybody that participated tonight. I'm not going to get to everybody in the queue. I'm sorry. It's after 12, so I'm going to sign off. And we'll pick up next week where we left off. Thank you, everybody. God bless, and pray for the nation, and pray that this thing ends, that we get God back in our system as soon as possible to straighten this stuff out. Anyway, we'll see you next week, same time, same place. Thank you.